on a completely different and much lighter hearted note, let me tell you about Orville the Duck.
Hello and welcome to Lexitecture, a podcast about word origins and histories. My name is Ryan, and in each episode, my friend Amy and I bring a new pair of words to share their stories with each other and you. You can find our past episodes and the occasional blog post on our website at lexitecture.com. Follow along with us on Twitter and Facebook at Lexitecture. And if you really like what we do, you can support the show at patreon.com/lexitecture. Today's episode, sports slogan.
I've caught up with the thing I was trying to do, and we're ready to word, except for the fact that we have thank yous to give out, because we have new Patreon sponsors.
Oh, nice.
Huzzah. So
I do love being able to say thank you for things. Generally means that nice stuff has happened.
Yeah. And
these days I'll count anything pretty much as a nice thing. Anything that doesn't actively suck, I'm like, woo, let's celebrate.
And this stuff is the opposite of actively sucking.
Yeah,
I don't mean actively blowing, because that's a whole... Listen, anyway.
Yeah, stop. Stop that chain of questioning, please.
Never mind. The point is, thank you to Elizabeth and to Scott for signing up as new Patreon sponsors.
Yay! Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Scott. We are awesome, as always, entirely grateful and really pleased that you enjoy what we do enough to pay a bit for it. And yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And Scott, actually, it was funny. I saw he was a new Facebook connection as well, and shared the last episode link and gave us a nice little shout out as well and stuff like that. So that's also awesome. So I was like, hey, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing this and all the rest of stuff. And then I checked my email. It's like, new Patreon.
Yay.
Oh, that too.
Basically, Scott, he was like, what a great guy. And then he saw the email and was like, what an outstanding guy. And then he saw the other email and he was like, Elizabeth.
Yeah, everything is awesome. Yeah, it's fantastic. So thank you to that. And thank you to all of our Patreon sponsors and everyone who just... Yeah, it does leaves little reviews.
We're super grateful for a whole lot of things to do with this podcast, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I would probably start at the bottom with, I'm incredibly grateful that I can, like, hang out with my friend, despite the fact that we live thousands of miles away from each other. That still sort of blows my mind. And I know that phones have been around for a long time, but, you know, it's like, this is better. It definitely is.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then the fact that you know, a podcast is a thing, which I actually didn't know until you told me. So thanks for that. And the fact that people actually listen is another level of super duper awesomity. That's a word I just made up. And then the fact that people will give us a wee Patreon nod and share things and say nice stuff. And yeah, life is good, even when the apocalypse is knocking on your door.
So all that stuff. Thank you to everyone for all the things. There, that ought to cover it. Would you like to go first this week?
Why, of course.
All right.
I am excited about this word for one very, very simple reason. And it is that it has an etymology from a language that I don't think I've ever spoken about. Because invariably, you know, you get curious about a word, you go to your kind of usual research places. So for me, that's usually start at the OED, and I usually go to Etym Online, and then I'll kind of inquire from there as to whether or not there are other things that I want to pursue further. And quite a lot of the time, you know, almost all of the time, you're looking at words that are Latinate, they're Greek, or they're Germanic. And this word is none of those things. And the word is, just like Orville, who wished he could fly right up to the sky, but he can't, it's a slogan.
Oh.
And slogan, which the OED gives two definitions for this word. I'm going to give you the second one first. Quite unusual in that, generally speaking, words have a million different definitions. But here the different definitions given are pretty stable. I would say that the second one is probably a bit better known than the first, but I'll tell you what the second one is. The OED gives it as the distinctive note, phrase, cry, etc. of any person or body of persons. Now especially a motto associated with a political party or movement or other group, or a short and striking or memorable phrase used in advertising. And that kind of covers pretty well what a slogan is, as far as most people are aware. So this particular sense dates from 1704. And one of the things I love about this citation is, you know, spellings often change throughout the history of citations within the OED. And the quotation here is from Maidment Scott Pasquills. I'm not really sure what Pasquills means, but it's, your slogans are falsehood and plunder. I mean, falsehood's a great word. Plunder's a great
plunder.
Word.
Plunder. Yeah.
And slogan here is spelled S-L-U-G-H-O-N-S, which is just outstanding. Oh. Slughorns.
Yeah, slughorns.
Yeah. And when you see this particular spelling, it seems very odd, but it's actually not quite as odd as it might seem. Another citation given in the OED for the second meaning of the word that I feel I have to share with you just because I've got no idea what's going on, but it's brilliant. It's from Punch, the magazine Punch from 1930. And the 19th February edition said, "Look at the price of bacon," was his slogan. I don't know who it was who had the slogan, "Look at the price of bacon," but I think it's good advice, just generally good advice for life.
I think I might just start saying that.
Yeah, look at the price of bacon. So the slughorn, or in fact even given in a 1680 citation as slughorn, S-L-U-G-H-O-R-N, which becomes slogan, it's much easier to see why it's being spelled like that when you look at the first definition given in the OED, which says that slogan is a war cry or battle cry, specifically one of those formerly employed by Scottish Highlanders or Borderers or by the native Irish, usually consisting of a personal surname or the name of a gathering place. And the reason that I thought that slogan was such a cool word to investigate is because its etymology is from Gaelic.
Oh, now, neat.
Gaelic and I have a bit of a shaky history, because there was a time in my life where I was furiously anti-Gaelic. Now, that doesn't make any sense. You know, we've all of us done things in our life that didn't make any sense. But it was roughly about the time as a young academic that I was looking to perhaps pursue further study. And what I discovered was, had I been a speaker of Scots Gaelic, there's an absolute wealth of opportunities out there for scholarship, for sponsorship, for all kinds of things. And of course, this is because, while at the time I felt it was very annoying and unfair, I was just being a privileged little bitch, essentially, because the reason that there is a wealth of opportunities and sponsorships and various opportunities involved with Scots Gaelic is because it's, you know, it's technically termed as an endangered language. And there is an effort, or there certainly was at that time, a very concerted effort to try and preserve the language and the culture relating to that language. Now, as a young out for myself, trying to find some cash student, I was very annoyed by this, but now that I am perhaps a little bit less selfish and perhaps a little bit more aware of how important languages are, I would say, you know, good for the Bord and Gael, who are trying their best to continue to prop up this language, to make sure that people are speaking it and teaching it and living in it and working in it and studying it. One of the things that I used to say is that no one in this part of Scotland ever spoke Gaelic, so it's disingenuous to kind of promote it here. I don't know that that's necessarily true. It's actually quite a complicated language in terms of its history. And it's believed that, some scholars believe that Scots Gaelic was brought to Scotland by the Irish. Now, a small point that I should make, in Scotland, it's the Gaelic, and in Ireland, it's Gaelic. I don't know why that is. Yeah. But it took me a long time to get my head around that. I used to get it confused every single time. The way I tend to remember it is that historically Scotland and France had that long alliance, and Gaelic is, of course, an adjective meaning French. So in Scotland, we speak Gaelic because we like the French. But it's a super cool language to listen to. And growing up as I did with a family who were into Scots folk music, I've heard quite a lot of Gaelic. No Gaelic speakers, as I said, not, you know, there isn't a Gaelic heritage really in this part of Scotland. But when you do come across people who sing Gaelic songs, there's a beautiful tradition called Puirte Buil, which means mouth music. And it's just these absolutely gorgeous, usually very fast, quite pacey. It's almost like a tongue twister being set to music.
Right, and, okay.
And some really glorious music and instruments and poetry and all kinds of things. In Scotland, most people first experience Gaelic, or certainly people who are about my age, used to experience it because there is a BBC Alba channel and they used to put on kids TV programmes with Gaelic overdub.
And oh, okay.
It always reminds me of a friend of my mother's. When her grandson was really little, he absolutely adored Padraig Post, which was the Gaelic name for the well-loved British TV character Postman Pat.
Postman Pat, right.
And Padraig Post was a firm favourite and used to watch it on TV every day. And eventually his parents decided that they would get a video. In those days, it was a VHS video. God, I feel old. And they got him a Postman Pat video. And they put it on for him, and he yelled and screamed because it was wrong. He only liked to watch Postman Pat in Gaelic, which he didn't speak, and which nobody in his life spoke. But in terms of his entertainment, Padraig Post was the way to go. Postman Pat could get lost.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, back to slogan. Wow. So, the etymology is given in the OED as being from two Gaelic words. Now, I don't know any Scottish person who knows how Gaelic is pronounced, because I don't know any. I tell a lie. I know one Gaelic speaker. I've never talked about it with her, but it honestly sounds like people are making the language up as they go along. Like there's not a single syllable that you can recognise until you get one of these really modern words. So there's a sort of a famous joke that Scottish people make about Gaelic, where it sounds like a horse and behind you had a helicopter. And I'm sure that Gaelic speakers hate that shit, but that's sort of the experience that I have had of hearing it on the news and that kind of thing. So the two words that lead us to slogan are, I'm going to spell this and I'm going to have a go at pronouncing it, but apologies, okay, Gaelic speakers. Slagerm. So sla, okay. S-L-U-A-G-H, which means host, and germ, G-H-E-I-R-M, or G-A-I-R-M, which means cry or shout.
Oh, okay.
Which makes perfect good sense.
Yeah.
And Etymonline gives this as battle cry, sla germ, and they translate sla as army or host or slew. And this comes from Celtic and Balto-Slavic slough or slough or slow, help or service. And that last bit, germ, gives us another word, which never in a million years would I have considered had its origins the way that it does. Actually, the word garrulous, which is a word that I enjoy anyway because I am garrulous, but garrulous comes from the Latin garrulus, talking or talkative or chattering, from the Latin word garire, to chatter. Which reminds me that, of course, while it sounds so completely unlike any other language that I generally think of as being Indo-European, that Gaelic is part of the Celtic branch of Indo-European. So we've got garrulous coming from Latin, and we've got slogan coming from Gaelic, but they both use that gar root, which is in fact a pie root. And the pie root gar means to call or to cry. And the wonderful, wonderful University of Texas at Austin, the University of Texas at Austin Pie Etymon Index that I totally love and I can't recommend enough. It's such a great site. They have a little rundown on gar, which means to call or to cry. There were two things that I found really interesting about this root. First of all, here are some of the English words that come from this root. So we have slogan, and we have garrulous. We also have care, and charm, and cherry or chari, which means dear or treasured. So charm has its roots in crying, because to charm was to chant or to recite a magic spell.
Oh, okay.
And care, as in without a care, care is grief or suffering in mind. Suffering in mind is how they put it. It's quite a lovely way to go. And I suppose one can imagine that grief like that would cause one to cry out. And there are all sorts of words in. We've got Iranian, zar, meaning song, or zarun, to sing. Armenian, we have sikan, which means to swallow. So it's interesting to see that the various diversions of this root.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, crying itself is, there are lots of different ways to cry. You know, there are lots of potential reasons why a person might be calling or crying. And the second thing that I found really interesting about looking it up on this site is that as well as listing the etymon and the reflexes from all the various different languages, the University of Texas at Austin site also has the semantic fields that these roots belong to. So they give two here. First of all, they have language and music, and this form is to call or to summon. And there are 15 different pi roots, pi etyma, that have some reference to this. So we have to call to, we have hello, to yell or to cry, to scream, to call in praise, to orate, to cry as in to weep. So it's not just, languages like English that have all these varying subtleties within the field of you know, ways to cry. That's as old as language itself, or certainly as old as pi, which I found really cool. The second semantic group that they file it into is emotion, as in to weep. And again, there are about the same number, maybe about 15 different pi roots that in some way relate to the semantic field of crying or weeping. I think my favourite is probably, it's spelled simply with a single letter U, and the translation that's given is, ooh, interjection of pain. And it kind of makes sense, you know. Crying is as old as existence. It's the first thing that babies tend to do. As soon as they're born, they cry, and it's seen as a good sign for that to happen. And so all of this crying and chatting has led us back to slogan, a battle cry, or a catchy little, phrase or sentence. Keeping an eye on the price of bacon, whatever you like.
That was the very first, there's a lot of cool stuff in there, and this is not meant to detract or to indicate or suggest in any way that I don't appreciate all of that various detail and history and awesome
Ryan
etymology.
Ryan at his most Canadian. But I do like it when people apologize before they even speak.
The second you followed up, have you seen the price of bacon with, it's often used as a Scottish and Irish Gaelic battle cry.
Bacon!
That was it for me. I immediately had any one of the number of battle scenes from Braveheart playing in my head, except what William Wallace was screaming on the way down the hill was,
look,
have you
the
seen
price
the price of bacon?
Bacon!
Yeah. And it's because I'm a child.
We wouldn't have you any other way.
Get distracted by all these
I quite liked that little note in the definition that it usually consisted of a personal surname or the name of a gathering place. That's awesome. Let's just shout out somebody's name before we go to war.
Yeah.
Or the gathering place, it almost suggests to me if you survive, I'll see you at this place. Kind of like, you know, I'll see you at the patio.
Yeah. Yeah. Meet at the Winchester. Yeah, I like it.
So, yeah, slogan.
Very cool. And we kind of have, well, we have a good title again this week.
I expect because nothing less.
The word that I have selected is sport.
Ooh.
Or sports. Now, I wanted to talk about this first because I can't... Have you ever had one of those things where you have a thought and you're like, oh, I think that's probably this, but then you immediately counter it with something else and you become just completely lost, like you're unable to decide between the two things, and nobody else has presented an opposing view because you haven't gone so far as to put your theory out there, but you've just immediately contradicted it.
Most of the arguments I have are with myself.
Right.
For sure.
It becomes...
Yeah. This is very
mentally the way I visualize what's happening in my brain is being, you know, that thing about how cats always land on their feet, but buttered toast always lands buttered side down. So if you strap a piece of toast, buttered toast to a cat's back, you can have a perpetual motion machine because it'll just fall almost to the ground and then just start spinning for the rest of time. That's what's happening in my brain.
That's what's happening in your brain.
The focus of this particular little weird obsessive episode is I can't tell if sport versus sports is something similar to the math versus maths thing. Mm. Like, I very rarely will hear the singular sport used to describe, like, for instance, the sports section of a newspaper or in sports news. But I feel like there might be something where I feel like I've heard British commentators and, like, in a British English context, sport used singular
this
more
is,
often.
This is super interesting because I don't know either. And I feel like as soon as I start to look, I am self-conscious about what I'm looking for. But
yeah,
I don't think it's quite as clear cut as math versus maths.
No, I don't think so. But
I think that, you know, we would talk about this the sports section in a newspaper. Yeah, people do say that sport rather than sports, but you would have sports day rather than sport day.
Right.
There is, of course, let's call it well established publication newspaper called the Sunday Sport.
Oh, okay.
It used to be a really great place to see tits, but fortunately, even British newspapers don't do that anymore. yeah, it's not a particularly... it doesn't have a reputation for high journalistic standard. Let's just leave it at that. Yeah, that's actually really interesting.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, it's making me think about... I saw a tweet this morning from Dan Midgley of Because Language.
Yes.
And the reason that I kind of stopped upon it was because it answered a question that my husband often asks, which is, why is it a toothbrush and not a teeth brush?
Right. The old joke is that it was invented in Oklahoma or something.
This was part of the tweet. And so I said to Ross immediately, okay, oh, you're finally going to get the answer to your question. Why is it a toothbrush and not a teeth brush?
Right.
And it, of course, etymology and language, it wasn't a clear-cut answer of it's this because of that. But right, it did talk about the interesting way that human beings tend to deal with plurals in English.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend that you kind of go and have a listen to that while I engage the perpetual motion machine in my own brain as I desperately try to remember whether or not people say sport or sports.
Yeah. I wonder if that's...
This
is another tangential thing. There is a term for that where a singular stands in for plural or a part stands in for the whole. Like
when a part stands in for the whole, it's a synecdoche.
That's what it is, yes.
I don't know about the singular and the...
I wonder if it's like a version of that or an analogous to that at all. I don't know. Anyway, sport or sports. lots of different senses for this, but generally... And we're also going to come to why the Sunday Sport is called that, because it...
Cool.
All of that makes sense, actually. So... You know, you get organized sports, you got things like sport fishing or sport hunting, making sport of something to have fun with, you know, any sort of diversionary fun activity from or various levels of organization, all that good stuff. I don't feel like we need to go into the various definitions of sport. I think that's fairly common enough that people have that. What is interesting is, well, there's a bunch of interesting things. You're in luck. Sport.
It's almost as though you chose it on purpose.
Yeah, weird,
huh? For that very reason.
Yeah, bizarre. So it shows up in the OED in 1425, but it shows up both as a verb and as a noun.
Oh, interesting.
In 1425, in different publications. So it's not even like it's just the same book listing them in two different ways.
Obviously, it just had a really good agent.
It must have had a great... Yeah, exactly. So I'm not sure whether we are at the heart dealing with a verbed noun or a nouned verb.
Or a verb. Okay.
But it's one of those. But, interesting number two, is that either way, it's an abbreviation.
Ooh.
Of an earlier word from right at the beginning of the 1300s, disport.
Well, there we go.
D-I-S-P-O-R-T. And a disport was a diversion from serious duties, relaxation, entertainment, amusement, or... like a thing that acts as or causes those things.
Right.
So it can either be the diversion itself, the abstract concept of entertainment, amusement, relaxation, or it can be a thing that amuses or entertains or relaxes someone.
The Rubik's Cube was a well-known disport.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So it is of French origin, which is why it shows up in, you know, doesn't show up until the 1300s and then the 1400s. And this one, another one of these sort of side little bells ringing in my head is like, I wonder if it's connected. You know, the common attribution of the reason why we have different words for food when it's cooked or meat when it's cooked from when it's an animal. And there's that idea. I don't actually know how cast iron true this is, but the idea is the cooked meat, we get those names from French, from the Norman influence, and the animals we generally have the old English or older Anglo-Saxon terms for, so cow versus beef, sheep versus mutton, that kind of thing.
And of course the reason generally given for that is because one group of those people were raising those animals and the other group of people were eating those animals.
Right, yeah. And so I found it interesting that this, you know, the word for recreation, leisure, diversion does come into English with the Normans, and that sort of does track along those class lines. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
The leisure classes were the ones who were eating the cooked meat and going and playing whatever. So I don't know. That's just something that kind of showed up in my brain.
Yeah, sure.
The important part for us is that the French word is déporter, D-E-S-P-O-R-T-E-R, meaning to divert, amuse, please, etc. So we're still there.
Uh-huh.
And it's a compound word from the de, D-E-S, meaning away, and porter, meaning to carry.
Yeah, this is so, when you said disport, I was like, oh, this is a completely, I recognize that root. You know, I didn't recognize it in sport, but it's immediately obvious in disport. Yeah,
yeah, once you get it longer. And so it's something that carries you away from the serious matters of your life,
lovely,
or whatever else, right?
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, it's a very cool little thing. So ultimately, it comes from Latin portare, meaning to carry, which leads back to the Pi root per, meaning to lead or pass over. Now, we saw this with opportunity when we did episode 88 with Andy Hollenbeck, and also gives us words like portable, portage, porch, import, deport, comport, comportment, fair, F-A-R-E as in fair and farewell, wayfarer, that kind of thing.
Cool.
One sense that I've always sort of wondered about, and that low-level wonder where you don't actually bother doing anything about it, is...
I'll see you there. I spend a lot of time in that space.
Yeah. Is the use of sport as in to wear or display. Like, he sported a silly hat. Or
Which is, I love that usage because it's so pretentious and anachronistic. And
yeah,
I love both of those things, you know, so...
He returned from his martial arts weekend sporting a nice new black eye or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and this sense goes back to the late 1600s in the earliest, and that had more of a general public display, usually with a tinge of ostentatiousness to it.
Right.
Sense. But the OED says that basically these senses are, quote, common from the last third of the 18th century. So once you get into the last, you know, 1770s, then you start seeing this use quite commonly.
Right.
There's not really a concrete indication of why.
Yeah.
Or what the connection is. Best I can come up with is that because it came from the general, like, sort of public display, ostentatious, flamboyant, decorative display, it reminded me of, you know, or I could see my way clear to finding a path from diversion, amusement, games to, you know, regalia for those games, like someone who is decorated in support of a team. You know, you got the jerseys and flags all over the place, or just a bit of fun with your decor. You're wearing a silly hat because it's fun and it's just you're making sport of it, like that kind of idea.
I think that does kind of lead on quite nicely from the idea of just, you know, what larks, let's have a diversion, because often people who have the time and the, you know, like you say, the leisure class, the time and the money and the means to do things like that, often kind of display, and not even necessarily sort of deliberate display, but, you know, they don't keep those things private and quiet. And, you know, I'm thinking about even, you know, generally people who are having a nice time, they tend to be quite loud and garrulous and, you know, perhaps a little bit over the top, you know, people that you notice.
Yeah. Well, and also that's the realm that fashion lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that realm. Like, if you have no time for leisure or activity or diversion and you're just like to business and working, it's like, does it cover the things that I'm going to be either arrested or injured by not covering? Perfect. Then it's clothes, put it on. Whereas the fancier things, you know, you have to have a little bit of time on your hands to engage in that.
Yeah, sure.
Or money. Or both. So that's how I can get to that sense of sport, but yeah, I don't know for sure.
You have to kind of get into the thicket and cut your own path.
Yeah, exactly. I can folk etymologize my way to it.
Etymologize.
Jeez. Yeah, I'd love to say it's too early, but it's almost noon, so there's no excuse for me. Now, I have to confess that this word came originally from a listener email.
Oh, nice.
A listener by the name of Andy Jameson, who Andy was writing in response to our discussion about the various experts that we might have listening.
Yes.
And we said, if you're an expert in something, let us know. And Andy, let us know. He is a fish expert.
Ooh.
He's not... it's not his job. I'll say it's not his job, but it sounds like his vocation.
That's awesome.
Because he's been doing it for a lifelong devotee of nifty swimming things, is what I would put on his business card. So he's, you know, member of local, you know, aquatic associations and aquarium type related groups of fun people. And it's basically just, he's just big into fish.
Big
and
into fish.
Cool.
That's amazing.
And his specific question was, and I was not aware of this sense at all, because it seems like it's scientific and that's just not me. And so it's the use of sport to describe like a natural variance, but a not necessarily unique, but definitely distinctive and out of the ordinary natural variance.
I feel like I want to do a spelling bee here and say, can you use it in a sentence?
Oh, I knew you were going to do that.
Well, then surely you've prepared a glowing example.
You would say, you know, a botanist or a biologist, a zoologist, ecologist, whatever, because it can be both plants and animals,
okay,
would find, you know, this is an example of a sport variety of this, I think is how it would be used.
Ah, okay.
So this tree... has grew without bark. Right. Suddenly just lost its bark, and it grows without any bark on it whatsoever. And it's a variety of tree that normally has bark. So this is a sport variety, because it's just this weird kind of one-off. It's basically been replaced by mutant.
I've never heard that sense before. It's quite lovely.
I like it. It's I'd never heard it. So apparently now more common is you would find the word mutant being replacing, which right. which is why I kind of think that's how, like, a sport variety, a mutant variety of this whatever.
See, now, I quite appreciate the fact that there is a term to describe that thing, which, you know, happens, as far as I'm aware, happens all across the natural world, without yeah. having connotations of 80s and 90s cartoons and ooze. Because, I mean, like, yeah. you know, mutants are awesome in that cartoon world sense, but I think when you're trying to be serious about a discipline, it must be a little bit annoying sometimes to be like, for people to be like, yeah, mutants! And you're like, no, yeah, exactly. I just mean it doesn't have any bark, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And it, so the way this is actually is this one is a shortening of a phrase,
ooh.
Sport of nature.
Ooh, and so that's beautiful.
Yes,
so
right?
Nature so it's, has just been playing.
Yes.
Carried away by its own leisure and come up with yep. this. Oh, that's absolutely glorious.
Isn't that neat? So that's where that comes from. So if you've got a sport variety, it's nature's sport is just playing around and just inputting.
What it can come up with.
What if we flip this switch and this, you know, this animal, this example of this animal now does this.
That's so cool. I like that a lot. Way cooler.
Which of course
than
is the entire, yeah. Which in, I mean, obviously, that's the entire basis of the whole evolution thing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
just
exactly.
these. Sporting attempts by nature, and one of them catches on and just works, and that becomes the norm, and then the sport becomes finding new things to do.
So while God may not play dice, nature will play whatever it wants to.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was quite a cool thing, but I had never heard that. I had never heard that use of sport either. But Andy, that's
yeah. Thanks, Andy.
That's where that comes from.
I would never have learned that without you, and I like yeah. that a lot.
So when it comes time, you all owe Andy a beer for learning that variety, that version of sport and where it comes from.
I can't wait to pay people back beers for cool.
Yeah. Great.
And that's it for another episode of Lexitecture. To get in touch with us about something you heard in this episode, you can email us at words@lexitecture.com. You can also follow along and talk to us at Lexitecture on Facebook and Twitter, and at Lexitecture Podcast on Instagram. For back episodes and the occasional blog post, visit us at lexitecture.com. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.